Welcome back, everybody. We are back for another One Great Work Warrior Roundtable discussion. This is going to be an amazing one. But before we get into the topic, I want to introduce the Warriors. You know them all. We have Chris, we have Brandon, Derek, Jim, Jerry, and myself, Rick. And the topic for this evening is a great one. This is going to be such a great discussion, one you're not going to want to miss, guys. And the topic is acceptance of slavery. So that's the topic. We're going to dive into it. Stick around to the end. And I'm going to pass it to you, Jim, since this was the topic that you wanted to discuss. So take it away.
All right. Thanks, Rick. So I was trying to remember, because I'd come up with this idea for the topic a couple months ago. And for people who watch this, I don't know if you guys realize we all meet up every week, the six of us, and we're always throwing ideas around and just, you know, catching up on things. And so when I put this out there for acceptance, that was a couple months ago, and I was like, what? Why did I say that again? And I think it was either because of two things. And one of them is the Serenity Prayer. And the other one, I think a lot about the Revolutionary War, you know, and how things were back then and the way things are today. And, you know, why did back then they declared their independence? And, you know, like Patrick Henry, like, has that famous quote, give me liberty or give me death. And he's not like the greatest guy to point to because he died a slave owner, but I mean, that's one of the boldest quotes from that time period. And that just goes, it really speaks to, you know, the men who were fighting in that war and the people in their mindset, give me liberty or give me death. Like, they're not accepting this monarch anymore, you know? Like, they really were not accepting that system. And, you know, it got us to where we are today. But then if you look at today, it's like when it comes to taxes, it's the percentage is so much higher. And so I that's what I think about a lot, is why are we accepting this? Like, why was it was like so much less when it came to taxation back then, but the people weren't willing to accept it. You know, it was more against that monarch, where today everyone's still just accepting the entire system, but it's still a system of slavery and it's amplified. And so that's what I mean by acceptance, because acceptance is like another word, like many in the English language, that has like many meanings. So I was thinking a lot about that word this week, and, you know, like, it could be a positive thing to, like, you get accepted to something that you want to be accepted to, like, people give acceptance speeches when they win an award, like things like that. But that's not really what I'm talking about. Talking about, like, the another word that came up was, like, when I'm talking about acceptance, like, why do we tolerate it? You know, and then I looked up the etymology of tolerate. And it comes up in the etymological dictionary, right? In 1530s, in reference to authorities, allowing without interference, to suffer to be done, allow negatively by not preventing, right? So we're allowing it to occur. We're not preventing the slavery that we are always talking about. We're not doing anything to prevent it. We're tolerating it. We're accepting it, right? And you know, like, I'm always asking, like, why? Why is it that way? And we do know. We know why. You know, there's a lot of the psychology behind it, and the beliefs and the programming that we've all were born into. And I'd say all of us here, we are like the black sheeps, right? In our families. And a lot of people don't want to be the black sheep. They just want to be accepted. That's what it gets down to a lot too, is when I've been thinking about it, is people just want to be accepted. So they just go along with it, as long as, like, they just grin and bear it. And so basically, I love to hear what you guys have to say about it, but like these words, acceptance and to tolerate, you could really just chalk it up to willful ignorance, right? Because we always are getting into that. So people are like willfully ignoring it, which is, it's worse. But it's like when you are accepting and you're tolerating it, it's ignorance, right? Well, I'd like to hear what you guys have to say, your thoughts on willful ignorance and acceptance. So I'll pass it on, whoever wants to go.
Well, I'll jump in. All right, so we talk about the acceptance of slavery. As always, let's break down our words. So what does it mean to accept? Jim had talked about, tolerate. So what are we talking about when we're talking about the acceptance of slavery, which, the acceptance of anything? To take what is offered, to take what is in front of you, to admit, to he'll agree to receive willingly. So to accept slavery means you are presented with slavery and then you take it, And one thing about how the warrior, the true warrior, the warrior mindset is we do not accept the, we do not accept the conditions of slavery. We stand, held against it. Once you accept the conditions of slavery, then you tolerate those same, conditions. We recognize those conditions and we acknowledge them, but we never accept those conditions because that goes against everything we stand for. That goes against freedom. That goes against truth. That goes against, morality. That goes against, goodness. That goes against all of the positive, connotations and aspects and principles that we, associate with natural law, Maya, freedom, anarchy, et cetera. So we don't accept those conditions. We just recognize them. And I've come up with like three slaves, or like three slave, mindsets, which keeps these conditions, present. But also too, within these three mindsets, the slave accept these conditions. So to describe one, I would call it the obedient lapdog. And this would be like Samuel L. Jackson from Django Fett, or like the house Negro, or like the order follower, willing to serve, because to serve is a willing choice to participate in the slave system, So you're saying, okay, I may get, some free handouts, like I may get, whatever. As long as I serve this, hell authority, then I may get, something in return. So I willfully choose to serve, just like in John Wick, like if you've ever seen that franchise, like once you, are with the round table, what does the obedient lapdog say? I'm willing to serve, So the obedient lapdog is willing to serve the master, then therefore use fear to install to keep these conditions present. Then you got the have-wayers, the semi-aware, they're semi-aware to the conditions, but choose not to get involved in changing those conditions, which are slavery. And these are the, like the keyboard warriors, the keyboard commandos, majority of the people in our Telegram group, majority of the people who are listening, the people who come, he'll listen week after 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 week, but they're still too chicken shit to actually get involved. You know, and then you have the other cowards who want to attack other people, you know, who are putting out good information on natural law and morality, but they aren't doing jack shit, you know, just trying to contaminate, you know, have the great work because they have no great work of their own, you know, have to show. So these are the half-wayers, you know, like the half-assers, you know, like they get their toes a little wet, but they don't actually do shit, you know. And what they're saying is, you know, I acknowledge these conditions, but I'm still too much of a pussy to get involved. You know, so they still accept the conditions of slavery because not doing anything is still a form of action. And because you're not getting activated and you're not in right action, then therefore you were in wrong action. Then therefore you accept those conditions. And then we have the most dangerous, the most absolute fucking dangerous is the willfully ignorant. These are the people who went and got jabbed. You know, hell, these are the people who went and got the vaccines. These are still all the idiots who go out and vote. You know, these are still all the idiots, you know, who were out there protesting, you know, like the people who were calling for censorship. These youthful ignorance are in such a state of delusion. They are unaware of their own ignorance, which is an extremely dangerous place to, you know, have to be in. It's one thing to recognize if you're ignorant, you know, like I recognized that I was ignorant and I wanted to change. But when you are ignorant of your own ignorance, that is even more deadlier. So they actively choose to ignore the knowledge of the conditions, which are slavery, therefore keeping those conditions present. And of course, you know, hell, it comes in three, because these three mindsets are what keep, you know, humanity, you know, enslaved, and they feed off each other, you know. So, and I'll get into one of the main tactics that is used, that has always been used, you know, to keep humanity enslaved. And it's not done by the ones who are at the highest. You know, we do it to ourselves, you know, sadly. So I'll pass it on to Chris.
Thanks, Brandon. Yeah, I mean, the ignorance of the ignorance is hard to imagine in a way how so many people could be so fooled. Once you come to recognize the truth that slavery is the condition that we're in, you know, I've often thought of the allegory I've shared in the past of the fish in the sea versus the fish in the fish tank. You know, if you're born in a fish tank and you're a fish, you've probably never seen the sea. And that's the experience we're having in the system because we're born into it. And, all these small decisions day by day are forms of acceptance, right? We accept something by not saying no, by not declining a thing, right? If someone says, hey, I put food out, you know, and we all expect that means, oh, you can have some, right? Unless you say, no, I don't want some. That's how you decline a thing. And so, without the idea in our mind to begin with, as the fish that grew up in the fish tank, it's very difficult for us to get to the point where we can even know that there's something to say no to, you know, and I'm remarking on what Brandon was saying about being ignorant of being ignorant. And the thing is, though, that I've come to recognize about this reality is that we all do have this thing called our will. Our choice. It's one of the most powerful things that exists in this universe. And having the license or the ability to drive your own boat, your own vehicle, your own body is the gift from the universe to you. And so what's sad is that these bodies of ours have so much capability to inspire, to motivate, to bring new things into the world. And yet we're living like we're half asleep. And I guess if there's one thing that I really would want to say to people is that if you had the ability to live the life of a superhero, like a movie, right? The life of an adventure story, like a book you've read, why would you not do that? If you had a choice of either living a dull, kind of sad, dreary life and boring, or you could do something exciting and have a good story to tell, why wouldn't you choose the path with all the twists and turns, you know? And that has to do with my own personality. But that being said, one of the most inspiring books I've ever read is Man's Search for Meaning, written by Viktor Frankl. And this is something I've brought up many times, because talking about value, one of the best ways to understand value is to look at a situation where all value of human life was completely put out the window and see what happened and see where that put people's minds. And Viktor Frankl was a writer who described watching death on a monumental scale, watching people face death in a way that most of us never will, and saw how people reacted and came out of that and used it, that knowledge and that experience, to create a type of psychotherapy. So I wanted to share one quick quote by him, and then I'll say a little bit more about him later. But he described, when we saw a comrade smoking his own cigarette, we knew he had given up faith in his strength to carry on. And once lost, the will to live seldom returned. So he called it in the book sometimes smoking the last cigarette, or that's the way I recall it. And he just noticed and described in the book how you could really see this whole change come over a person once they had sort of resigned themselves that it was over, right? And then they just sort of like got extremely depressed, and then they were just bound to die within a day or two. As much as you did not want it to be so, it happened so many times. He observed it, and others around him observed it. People basically gave up. And it kind of reminds me of the terrible process that's been described to me of how a horse is broken, where it gets beaten and beaten and beaten until it finally submits and just maybe gets down on its haunches or whatever and just starts following orders. So if you are broken, if you have been broken, that's a very sad thing, right? And we don't want to be that as humans. Like I said, you want to live the life of adventure. We want to live the life of the hero. And yet many of us are accepting a defeated, broken horse style of living. And my challenge is to ask you, the listener, you know, which is closer to your life? One of the broken horse and the beaten down stepchild, or whatever you want to call it, you know, the doing things out of default because you have to, because you have no other choice, or choosing to fight for freedom, you know? And so life is going to keep asking you that question. And really it's in your heart and your will, whether it's that time where you're going to give up again in the next moment and smoke your last cigarette again, or choose to face the difficult journey, whatever that may be, to actually live this gift that's been passed to you from the universe. So it's up to you, really. I'm going to pass it to Rick.
Thank you, Chris. And thank you guys. All of you are making some great points. And this is an interesting discussion. And one I find myself having quite often on a lot of my shows. We get into, you know, what is going on and what are the symptoms, like what's causing it and why people seem to be accepting of it. And I kind of, you guys are all making so far making some great points, and I kind of see it in two kind of groups of people, at least the ones when I talk to a lot of people, and I try to as much as I can. I kind of falls into two groups, and you have, like Chris said, you have, I think, the people that are broken. They're already broken down, and they just kind of they're at that state. And so you talk to them, they're kind of have that defeated attitude. And a lot of it is just, you know, this I hear a lot, like, this is just the way things are. This is the way things have always been. What am I going to do about it? I'm one person. We've all heard it. Anyone, all of us certainly have that are on the panel here, and definitely probably a lot of the people that are listening, I would hope, if they're having those discussions, have heard it. And then the second group you run into, you can't even convince them that there is any slavery, which is they don't see it. They don't quite see it that way. And I think, and I've kind of made this point before with some people I've talked to on my show, like, you know, back in the day, you would have a chain around your ankle or your wrist bound, and you would be kind of like shackled, and you knew you were a slave. You had no doubt in your mind what I think the social engineers have done extremely well and geniusly is they've enslaved people's minds, and you don't see those chains. So it's really hard for people to even sometimes wrap their mind around it, but that's what they've done, is enslaved people's minds. How do you, it's hard to talk to people sometimes about that and try to explain to them that that this is a thing, that we are enslaved, and getting worse, by the way. I'd like to add that we are getting worse pretty much by the day. It's incredible when I kind of think back, and I wish people would do that more often, is kind of like think back, you know, even if you can and you got some age under your belt like I do, kind of look back at what it was like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 20 years ago, and be honest, and you're going to see what is really going on. And yeah, this acceptance is scary to me. And I want to say what kind of add on to what Brandon was saying. Like, I like talking about the tactics they use. For me, the tactic I see most blatantly, and I'm sure you guys are going to give other great examples, is fear. They love that tactic. The fear tactic is what they thrive in just putting out there. It's this constant fear. And, I don't think most people can even picture a free world, like what it really would look like a truly free world, the things that we say that we want. And I don't think a lot of people can even imagine that, and they have a hard time. And I would blame, once again, the social engineers, whoever you want to name them and whatever that is. But the social engineers have done this great job of just promoting that fear. How do they sell freedom? If there's no law and order and there's no government, then you're going to, yeah, you want freedom, but it's going to be total chaos. And that's how they sell it to people in a lot of the movies and culture and all this thing, is that, you know, people, I hear people say it all the time. Well, what would happen if there was no government? What would happen if there was no police? What would happen if there was no military? It would just be total chaos. And that's how they sell it. Once again, preying on the fear. And so I think a lot of people, that's why they go along with this. Even if they deep down, which I think, I would hope, most people realize that there's a problem. And we are losing rights. And, you know, technically, yeah, we are enslaved. And there's so many examples. So I'm just going to, I don't want to talk too much. I want to pass it on to someone else. And I'll come back and make a couple other points. But so far, you guys are doing a great job. It's a pleasure to have this discussion with you. So I will pass it on to you, my friend, Derek.
Cheers, Rick. Gentlemen, thank you so much. Hope you guys can hear me okay. I'm having some audio issues. I have to use my phone. I'm a little far away from home, but anyways, trying to fly free as a bird to a degree. Anyways, so Rick, spot on with the fear aspect. You know, there's a lot of fear-based mind control.
Well, Derek disappeared.
Yeah, I think he cut out again.
Oh, darn.
Can you hear me?
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, but we can't see you.
Jerry, why don't you jump in and we'll see if Derek comes back.
Yeah, hopefully. So, yeah, he was mentioning fear, and I'm looking forward to hear Brandon touch on that. But in my notes, I didn't write about fear because, think about it. If you are in fear, you're more likely to be controlled and submit to them. But if you are courageous and overcome the fear, you're unstoppable, man. And then another thing I was thinking about was when I was listening to Mark's Shadow Work webinar, is that he mentioned you have to deal with the trauma that you have. So all these people accepting slavery, you need to accept that there's a problem first and foremost. And to the people that are ignoring that, I mean, I probably wouldn't even talk to them, honestly. I would just look for the people who are somewhat, who understand there's a problem. And then you have to just accept where you are at the moment. Not just recognize where you are at the moment, as in, okay, right now I am supporting the government, for example. And then you say, okay, I see that that is contributing to violence. So I want to get away from that. And I do that by getting knowledge. And that's something I've been pondering, is I think the problem is people just lack knowledge, first and foremost. They don't have the knowledge to solve the problem. And yes, there are people who are cowards and aren't really speaking out against this, because if there were, we wouldn't be in the situation that we're in now. But yeah, get that knowledge, man. You have people like you guys putting out great work, and it'll get you started for sure. It'll get you learning about the conditions of the world and natural law. So then you're able to come to an understanding, and then you can take action. But we do have to shed that fear of death, man. I mean, what are you going to do? Oh, we're going to fucking kill you. Fuck you, man. I'm not fucking scared of that, because I'm courageous. Like, if we all had that fucking boldness, we would fucking overtake them like in the Revolutionary War. And as Jim was mentioning, the taxes, I think it was taxes on tea. I could be wrong, but we got to get angry first. And then we can fucking do something about it. So I'll pass it to Brandon.
We got 2/3 in the house. You know, this never gets sound when you got 2/3. But Chris brought up a great point, is we're dealing with broken individuals, you know. Of course, you know, Mark brought this up, you know, which most listeners should be familiar with his work. But, you know, like when you hear that, I don't think you quite, you know, understand it, you know, the first time. But when you really start to think about it and you really start to talk to people and you actually get involved and engage with people, then you will see that, yes, people are broken. So people are not, you know, operating, you know, correctly. They're not aligned, you know, correctly. So my question is, how do you break the will of another? Like, how do you break the will? You know, I did a presentation in 2021 called What is Behaviorism? You know, controlling the environment to control you. And in this presentation, I went through the classical stages of classical conditioning, you know, put out by Ivan Pavlov and John B. Watson. And then I also talked about the more, I don't want to say modern, because it's like 40, 50 years old, but the more recently part two of the classical, you know, conditioning, which is operant conditioning, you know, influenced by B.F. Skinner, by way of incorporating the rewards and the punishment, you know, aspect by way of repetition to take advantage of our animalistic, you know, nature, our animalistic, you know, component, which is embedded in all of our brains. And in this presentation, I broke down what operant condition was, and I gave many, many examples, which can be articulated and, you know, verified with the events that were taking place in 2021. So when we, you know, he'll ask this question, you know, why is it that people accept slavery, and why is it that people are still accepting, you know, slavery? Look no further than B.F. Skinner's work on operant, you know, conditioning. Because when we look at those steps and we look at what the main purpose of the reinforcements were, The reinforcements were there to increase program behaviors. Now, mind you, it's just behaviors. There's nowhere about increase program moral, you know, behaviors. So if we're talking about an increase, you know, in behaviors, who to say that the social engineers would not want to reinforce and increase immoral behaviors? So how do they do that? Well, would you not reward individuals with certain, you know, gifts, certain luxuries for, you know, certain behaviors that were, you know, held immoral, you know, that the social engineers and the Satanists and the dark occultists would want? And then two, what this does is this has an effect on those who witness that, because other people, other willful, ignorant people see that behavior, get rewarded, and they associate that in their minds as, hey, that behavior is good. Hey, that behavior is acceptable in society. Then therefore, the mind programs reward with good, just like the dog programs reward, you know, treat with good. It's animal training. So you train people by way of reinforcing, by way of giving certain rewards to certain behaviors that people see in society, then they get influenced more and more by that behavior from those rewards. But then this also has another effect, because you also had the means of punishment, which you decrease behavior. Just like, you know, back in the day, you would, you know, slap the hand of a child, you know, sadly, yes, that's still violence. You shouldn't be doing that. But, you know, we all know what that punishment was. So once you feel that response, you associate that with bad. You associate that with negative. You associate that with that's not acceptable. There's no connect with associating that with immoral or moral to a degree. You just associate that with bad. But that doesn't equate to an immoral behavior. So who's to say that certain behaviors in society, like, you know, speaking out hell against the system, you know, saying no, who's to say that we couldn't decrease those behaviors by way of punishment, by throwing people in jail, by censoring people, you know, by fining people, by cancel culture, you know, by, by whatever means, by hell arrest. Then again, other people in society see those same behaviors, and what do they associate with that? That's not acceptable. That's not going to be tolerated. That behavior is bad. But yet, speaking out held against the hell authority figures is a moral thing to do. Yet the conditioning, because of the punishment to decrease their behavior, you program that behavior as not acceptable in society because you see the punishment and you feel the punishment. And then too, that punishment doesn't always have to come from the lapdog. The punishment doesn't always have to come from the order follower. The punishment can come from the willful ignorant. You know, just as though we see these behaviors, so we understand the energetic frequency, right? So what happens within the individual? Because they witness that punishment, then they buy into the fear. So then therefore, they censor themselves. They punish themselves by not engaging in that same behavior, to where you don't even need the order followers to punish people. You don't even need the wolf of ignorant to punish people. The fear is what punishes you, because you have been programmed to see that behavior and associate it with bad. And therefore, you know all the negative ramifications that come along with that behavior. So instead of speaking out, you'll look down. You know, hell, you won't use your voice. Instead of standing up, you'll stay seated. You know, you won't rock the boat because you know you may fear losing your job. You may fear, you know, your spot at the dinner table. You know, hell, you may lose whatever. You may lose money. You know, you may lose hell, your family, friends. So then you start to stand down. You start to kowtow. But no one is actually doing anything. There's no action in reality that's happening that's actually forcing you to do it. It's all a cowardly choice. Because Classical condition and operant condition is how you break the will of an animal. It's still used in training today. It's still used because it works. And the same training is still used on human beings, sadly. It's still being used. All these steps are still being used. I mean, you can watch my presentation. I gave multiple killing examples during COVID, you know, which can easily, you know, be verified. But the one thing that the social engineers hella good at is they get the individual to believe they're getting something in return. That's what the whole reinforcements were all about. You know, just like the dog who knows, okay, I'm going to get a treat if I play along. Well, you know, they have this illusion that you're going to get something in return. And then you start to play, that game. And that's how a lot of scams work. You know, if the scammer, you know, makes you believe you're getting something in return. But when it comes to how the punishment, you make them believe they are losing something that is deemed required to survive. So the punishment has an even more traumatic effect because you associate that with death. You associate that with castration. Then you're tapping into some of the deeper, darker fears that people really hate because people don't want to be kicked out of the group. People don't want to be kicked out of the family. You know, people don't want to lose their job because we all know, hey, you lose your job, hell, you can't pay bills. It's almost like a fucking death sentence, you know, to a degree. So we subconsciously realize all of these things that come along with this. And that's one of the main reasons why we are still enslaved and why people, sadly, you know, still accept slavery, because they don't have the balls to deal with all of the fear and bullshit and trauma and internal fortitude that has to come when it comes to doing the right thing and speaking out. So we don't really get too much crap, you know, from how the useful, you know, freaking idiots, but we self-censor ourselves because we get into this state of fear. We get into this state, oh, I don't want to be kicked out. And then therefore we just turn into that cog in the machine and we go along to get along. Like, we don't want to rock the boat. And then we sit down and we don't use our hello, boys. And I'm going to pass it back to Derek.
Thanks, yeah. Sorry, I had my mic on. Sorry for the background noise. And sorry, I'm having tech issues. Yeah, fear. Also known as an acronym of false evidence appearing real. And this is part of the insidious mind manipulations and everything that, you know, hey, and that's like just what the etymology of government means. Mind control, gubernare ment. But we have to understand that the government is just comprised of people. We are just comprised of people amongst the one great warriors. Unfortunately, a lot of people just lack principles that we just try to live and stand by, not just talk about, you know. Sadly, people are running on so many narratives, and we're building the matrix. We're building the slave system around us. And we're obviously accepting it because we're like excited. We're building this candy-coated fucking prison, you know? And yes, you guys, I think it was Crip Rick, you mentioned, social engineers and all that stuff. And yes, it's... they use the art of persuasion in such a manipulative way. And it gives us the idea that we're, you know, doing the right thing and all this stuff, yet we're actually just accepting more and more slavery and more infringements on our rights. And we comply, we sign contracts, you know, thinking about, you know, every little thing on, you know, like, yeah, the digital cage is, you know, closing in and all this stuff. And we have to still use it to do all these things. We have to have a smartphone just, you know, board a plane these days, it seems, you know. And so all these things, yeah, like reminds me of things we were talking about over at Chris and Leslie's house with, you know, the AI and all these things, you know, and like the whole digital AI and stuff. And people, how oblivious are people to the reality that they live in? And how oblivious are they even to the self-enslavement that they have put upon themselves via any kind of addiction, you know, overconsumption, not being able to control your urges or blah, fucking blah, you know? Oh, you got a sweet tooth. Oh, you're going to, you know, take that to your grave and all this stuff and get, you know, I'm not going to go to extreme of, you know, diabetes or whatever, but yeah, like sugar is more addictive than cocaine. You know, it all depends on what type of sweetener we're using. If you're using maple syrup, right on, and other things, you know. But yeah, it brings to mind like the gluttonous aspect, just like the lack of self-control. They're a slave to, you know, all these things that they consume, and unknowingly, or, you know, it just comes, you know, crossing a threshold where they're hooked and they can't control themselves. They have urges that they just, you know, submit to, and you know what I mean? And so aside from that, yeah, we got people that are, you know, they can point out the slave system and this and that, like, yeah, the oppressors and this and that, yet they're still oppressing themselves and other people around them. Like, what in the actual fuck? You know? Are you not activated, actualized? Do you find purpose in your life? You know, are people still, you know, got the head cage, religious bullshit, you know, mind control stuff, you know, going on in the background of their brain, you know? Have they balanced the both left and right hemispheres of their brain? You know, these are things people need to break the fuck out of first and fucking foremost a lot of times before they start pointing the finger at all this shit going on. Because they haven't figured out what is going on within themselves to really break free from the cages within themselves. So, and also, along the ride, they, you know, enslave sometimes like pets. They treat them like worse than an actual conscious companion. I have no problem with pets. I have, you know, I love cats and all that stuff. But, yeah, if you meditate on it a little longer, sometimes you think like, geez, like some of these, you know, dogs and cats and whatever, they seem like overly domesticated, and you know, there's the power control or and all this stuff that or power tripping or whatever people want to call it, that you know, you see within people, and you can kind of, for those that have done the shadow work and this and that, understand that there's some stuff going on that they haven't resolved within themselves, and that has to start first and fucking foremost, so that they can really understand the type of slavery that's going on in the external domain, and, you know, nip it in the motherfucking butt and stop complying to all this stuff, you know, as hard as it can be. Yes, there's, you know, so many nets, traps, and snares that we have to kind of untangle ourselves by, but we just go at it with pace and maybe with a little grace and whatever. So I'm going to pass it off. I'm glad I didn't cut out this time. Cool. Cheers.
Thanks, Derek. Yeah, I'm glad we were able to hear your words. Appreciate what you have to say. You know, we've brought up in different ways the balance of each of us as an individual, and the programmability of humans is something that has been shocking. The older I've grown and the more things I've studied and read, the more I realize just how programmable beings we are. And what's especially scary about that is, like I said, some people are being, all people are being programmed from birth. And the natural way we learn things is crucial to understanding the way natural law works. When you consider that we're not born with a lot of our empathy and sympathy as just default conditions. These are things that we also learn. We learn through interactions with other people through play. other children. We play with, we learn what it feels like to hurt one another and to inflict pain. And then we realize, oh, other people feel the way I do. But in our modern culture, everybody's so split up. It used to be at one time in ancient times, if you got one of the worst punishments you could get in a community or group setting was to be excommunicated, right? Because then you're on your own out there in the wild, right? But in the modern sense, we're all excommunicated from most types of community that you might imagine, because modern technology, modern devices, modern edifices of educational systems, keeping everybody in these different subcategories and groups, the structures have become so towering and looming of what being deceit and selfishness ruling overall in terms of business and money ruling in our modern culture. So these are the chains. These are the things that bind us to these different systems of control that keep us from recognizing that it's our own inner autonomy and choice that creates freedom. And the ability to choose is the most universal and amazing aspect of being alive. I'm going to go back to what I was talking about with Viktor Frankl. His book really hit because he explains that meaning, our search for meaning is the core of what we are. And some psychologists and writers will say that, you know, we just want to fit in, like I was saying. And that's our deepest desire. But I tend to agree with Viktor Frankl, who actually experienced some of the most heinous things possible in this realm of life and saw it firsthand. You know, what is really at the core of a human being's desire is to have meaning, a sense of purpose. So I'm going to take a little excerpt from the book, Man's Search for Meaning. And when he describes former prisoners, when writing or relating their experiences, agree that the most depressing influence of all was that a prisoner could not know how long his term of imprisonment would be. He had been given no date for his release. In our camp, it was pointless to even talk about it. Actually, a prison term was not only uncertain, but unlimited. A well-known research psychologist has pointed out that life in a concentration camp could be called a provisional existence. So just think about that for a minute, a provisional existence. A little further down on the page, the Latin word finis, F-I-N-I-S, has two meanings, the end or finish and a goal to reach. So these are sort of the two extremes of the way we want to live. Working towards a goal, a purpose, or there is none and it's already finished, right? A man who could not see the end of his provisional existence was not able to aim at an ultimate goal in life. He ceased living for the future, in contrast to a man in normal life. So today's modern normal life is much like the prisoner who does not know when the prison will end, because there's no end to our money system, our government system, our systems of religion that have been embedded in your thoughts. There's no end to it. So every day is how much percentage of a person's time is doing something because they have to do it to get enough money to get what they have to do because they need, because they have to. The more time of your day in this provisional existence experience, the less time of day you're actually making any choices or working towards any actual goal, or even have the wherewithal to stop and think, you should have a goal for your life. You should be trying to accomplish something greater than yourself. This is what we call the one great work. And if you've never even been exposed to the concept that one should do such a thing, your whole life is living from a provisional. It's like being sick and never knowing when you're not going to not be sick. You have a constant frustration of waiting. Is this going to be the end? Is this moment going to be the end? And you can imagine being on some sort of settlement. You know, I hope everybody's seen the Jones Plantation is a perfect description of this. We can kind of all imagine in our head the situation. You're on the plantation. Someone's ready to whip you if you don't get back to picking the cotton or whatever it is you're supposed to be doing. And your whole life is based on, like Brandon described, punishment, reward. Can I make it through the day without getting whipped? Right? You don't have a lot of time in your base emotional desire to just get through the day without getting excommunicated, whipped, or dead to actually stop and think about what would I actually want to do in my life if I were given a choice. And the scary thing is that the modern world, we do have quite a bit of time to do that. There's not actually someone standing with a whip over our head. It's a metaphorical whip of, if you don't come up with some money this week, you're not going to pay the damn bills, and the corporate, you know, whatever is going to come after you in some form or another. You're going to get kicked out of your house. You're going to get kicked out of your job. You're going to get put on the street. You're going to be embarrassed in front of your family and friends. But actually, our world is abundant with food. You can almost not run out of food in the modern Western culture anyway. You have time to think about these things. You have time to consider what would you actually want to do that might not be better just for yourself, but for others who follow you, or family around you, or your community, or people that might stop and listen to what you have to say. So I just want to challenge people to initiate. And what that means is to think for your damn self. I don't remember who's next, but Jim's back, so I'm going to hand it to Jim.
All right, thanks. Yeah, sorry, I had to run out there. But did you guys go over the Serenity Prayer at all? No?
No, it's all you.
Oh, cool. Yeah, because that's a big one when it comes to acceptance, right? So the original Serenity Prayer was, oh God, give us the serenity to accept what cannot be changed, and the courage to change what can be changed, and the wisdom to know the one from the other, right? And that's something that Mark Passio has spoken about as far as the original Serenity Prayer. It included us instead of being changed to give me the serenity to accept. And because when it's taken to me, it becomes about the individual. But originally, it was written for humanity as a whole. Like, I think it was written between the two world wars during the Depression and all that strife going on, and it came out of that. And it's definitely a useful thing for someone who has been in AA, and that's like kind of the first time I ever paid attention to it. I think my grandmother had it on a magnet on her refrigerator. But, you know, I've definitely heard it before I was in AA, but it's definitely became that actually more popularized from AA, but it also got watered down because of it. So, but what it really does make a difference, because, you know, you know, it's about us. It's about humanity as a whole. And when you get to just me, and not, I'm kind of still, I got a distraction outside my door. But all right, so what I'm trying to say is, when it comes to acceptance, accepting the things that we can change, it makes me think of this meme of a bunch of people on a boat, and there's a hole in the boat, and someone's saying, like, yo, there's a hole in the boat and we can fix it. And all the other people are making excuses or just saying good luck with that. That's how it seems, right? Like, that's what we keep going through when we're telling people, I mean, we can evolve the consciousness. We can heal our consciousness. These are the solutions to, you know, for freedom and to look at the world and morality objectively. And everyone's just like, good luck with that. And just, but we do know, like, that's what, why we're all here, right? We can't accept that humanity doesn't want to reach its highest potential. Like, it's just so shitty. Like, we want to see humanity reach its highest potential. We're willing to come on here and sound like we're fucking crazy because no one believes that we can. But we know it's possible. You know, this guy, I do see a lot of other people in other realms speaking about that we can reach our highest potential. Like, it's so possible. It's totally possible. So, like, but one of the things with, like, that scenario metaphor on the boat is, like, we can't change nature. We can't change, like, the sea below the boat or the ocean. We can't change that. But we could fix the hole in the boat. Right? And so I feel like that speaks to the serenity prayer. It's like, those are the things, like, we know we can change. And things we can't change, you know, and to know the difference. But that's basically it. I'm going to pass it because I was having a distraction out there. There's a lot of people who just came in. But, yeah, guys, thank you. I'm sorry that I was had to step out and got distracted there.
Thanks for sharing, Jim. You want to go, Rick?
I can definitely wrap up. Sure, I can go. And this is what I love about these discussions that we have, because we get so many amazing, unique, into perspectives and discussions and thoughts on these topics that we cover. It's really, I think, a cool and rare thing. And I love, Chris, that you kind of at the beginning, you brought up the allegory of, you know, breaking a horse. And growing, when I was a young teenager, I knew horse trainers who had race horses, and you would see how they would break a horse. I saw it daily because I would work around the barns, and it was amazing to see. And you're right. And to break a horse, it takes repetition. And as Brandon touched on as well, it's definitely a punishment and reward system. So it really ties into what you guys are all saying. And that's something I just thought of that as you guys were talking about that, and Chris brought up those allegories, because I was like, yeah, like, I saw it firsthand how they break a horse. And is it really that different than humanity in a lot of ways? And you guys have talked about it perfectly and really broke that down. I also think of the circus elephant that's got the chain around the ankle from the time, you know, they get it, and then they just keep that chain on there, and that by the time the elephant has been so broken, you know, it could walk away that chain and snap it in a millisecond, but it's so broken it doesn't even try anymore. And when I think about also the frog in the boiling water, in the pot of boiling water, we've all heard that one, and that's where unfortunately that is where a lot of humanity is at the moment. So great points. Those allegories were great, Chris, and I like how Brandon really hammered it home with the punishment and reward, because it is definitely a system that is happening. And then I think about what Jerry and also Brandon was touched on already, like what is it going to take to achieve this freedom, to break the shackles and the chains of slavery, you know, and to stop accepting it. And I can tell you, it's going to take care, for sure. It's going to take, as Derek was saying, courage. And I think Jerry touched on that as well. And most important, I think we've all said, it's going to take action. And that you have to get involved. And I want to say, yes, you, people who are listening, if you are not actively getting involved and doing it, and I keep saying, you know, find your own unique way to do it. You don't have to do what we're doing. You don't have to necessarily do a podcast. You can do We've seen people do it through music, amazingly, poetry, dance, art, paintings. And then there's also the people that can get involved by doing the things that is kind of like the unglamorous part, where you're not on a camera, you're not doing podcasts and stuff, but you need people that are helping on the, you know, behind the scenes to make sure that shows like this happen and do thumbnails and do editing and all these things. So there's a spot for you. And it is sadly needed. We need more help. The help's just not really out there. And that's another way to get involved. So I want people to think about that. Like, what unique skills do you have that you can bring to the table that you could really help do achieve what we're saying that we want to achieve, which is freedom for humanity. And I do realize that doing the great work, you know, speaking loudly about what people must do to achieve what they say they desire. People say they desire freedom. For me, it often feels like I'm shouting for silence. It really does. It's sometimes you think that nobody's listening or cares or whatever it is. But we all must get involved, do our part, as I just said. I think this is the most important at this time. And I think, it's a time I'm certain that will be looked back at and even probably studied and analyzed about what did humanity do or did not do to achieve the state wherever we're in the future. It's crazy. So that's just kind of where my thoughts are. I don't have much more to say, but I will end with saying one thing, and it's the saying of I heard in a movie, and I love the saying. It's always stuck with me. Everybody's going to know the saying I'm going to say when they hear it, but it's from the movie Gladiator. And that saying that he says is so powerful to me, and I think about it all the time. And what he says is, what we do in life echoes in eternity. Think about that. And I'll pass it on to whoever wants to go next.
I can go and pass it to Derek. Yeah, that's a great quote, Rick. Want to watch that movie now. But yeah, it's got me thinking about the human history and how we even got here. And it really just shows how, as a whole, we haven't really stepped up to the plate. And we've just been living in this fear-based environment. But of course, we can change that if we are willing to basically stop running away from the problems, start confronting it head on. So cause and effect, their actions absolutely can change the course of the slavery system that we're living in. And yeah, I mean, I just think about how we need kind of all kinds of people, as you mentioned, Rick, as in, okay, yeah, we could use some painters and dancers and podcasters. I mean, it doesn't just have to be this one kind of person, as long as we're all moving towards that goal, which is freedom. And also think about the hare and the turtle, the race, which is like, go at your own pace, man. Like, as long as you're moving towards the goal, like, you'll get there, man. And if we all do that, come on, we would have freedom right now. And, but yeah, that's, it's a very, it's looking distant, but that doesn't mean it can't be done. But I like to turn negatives into positives, as in, okay, we're in a slavery system, but shit, this is just making me fucking more resilient, and like, I'm gonna just be more passionate. So hopefully someone gets really inspired by this and just kind of has a talk with themselves and say, hey, how can I contribute to freedom? Thanks for being in this chat, guys. I had a good one.
Yeah, and I suppose, you know, and I'm going to ask myself this question, you know. People can ask themselves the same, you know, like on myself and within myself and with others even, you know. Yeah, I mentioned the pet dynamic. I know that's like, it's a little left fieldish for this topic, but it's just, you know, something for people to kind of ponder, take into consideration. You know, I love my dogs and cats, but anywho. Yeah, unfortunately, we are stuck in a fear-based system, which has been kind of this fear-based mind control, if you will, sorry. You know, and a lot of you guys echoed that, and which is key because, you know, that, you know, there's just so many different levels to this in the programming on top of programming where we're like literally just, you know, the Stockholm syndromed out person with the naysayer egg-headed vibe of cognitive dissonance, you know, anything in their face, they're just like, no, they're voting and gloating out there. You know, they're cheering on their own fucking slavery. You know, that's how bad the inversions have been, unfortunately. You know, but yeah, they're tricky. They're smart, right? They know the human psyche more than your average dumbass, lug nut, whatever, right? But yeah, we're all being coerced and, you know, under duress and persuade, and, you know, the false arts of the arts of persuasion. You know, the marketing is beyond belief. And we can't just, you know, it's not just government, but, you know, all the corporate bullshit and all this stuff, who seem to be more powerful than governments to a good degree. I mean, look at the bankster, prankster, wanksters, right? I'm going to finish off with a couple quotes real quick, starting with Oscar Wilde. It's easier to fool people than to convince them that they have been fooled. And this is what we come up against, you know, these brick walls. We try to say, hey, your house is on fire. And they turn around like, fuck you, man. Fuck you for trying to, you know, help me out. Quote by, what is this? Sojourner Truth.
We were robbed of that last quote. But oh, darn. I just, before we close up, if Derek pops in, we can let him read that quote. But as you were talking, Jerry, and then what Derek was saying reminded me again of the movie Finding Nemo. And I talked about real briefly, you know, I'm always doing too many allegories, and I was trying to limit myself to how many allegories and how many different examples I'm going to give. But in Finding Nemo, you know, like most of the fish in the fish tank, they've been in slavery their whole life. They've always been in the fish tanks, right? But it's Nemo and then that one other blackfish with the scar on him that have actually been in the ocean. And they're trying to kind of convince the other fish that it's worthy to try to come up with a plan to get out of this fish tank because there is an ocean to go to, which is like us. We're trying to tell people like, no, there is a place of freedom. And they had to come up with this pretty cockamamie plan where, you know, Nemo had to climb up in the hole and put the rock to block the machine so that their tank could get dirty. So then the owner of the tank would have to clean the tank and put them all in bags. And then that's when they were going to roll out the window and out onto the sidewalk across the street and into the ocean. And so it's kind of like, yeah, it's not a simple plan, but there is a way. And I think that's kind of what we're saying, folks. As hard as it sounds, we work together. If we have to get into that plastic bags and roll across the street, that's what we got to do. There is an ocean out there. There is freedom, and we got to work towards it. And that's going to take some initiation and plan, working together and starting working on the self and getting the self honest with the situation that, yeah, we're in slavery. We don't need to accept it. We need to fight against it. All right. Thanks much, guys. And much love. And we'll catch you next month. This is the One Great Work Warriors signing out.